Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the elections in Sweden, the results of which many find alarming, though not as dire as some predicted, with the far-right Sweden Democrats gaining 17.6% of the vote to the once-dominant centre-left Social Democrats' 28%, their worst showing in decades. Sherry Berman, a professor of political science at Barnard College of Columbia University and author of the forthcoming book, Democracy and Dictatorship, From the Ancien Regime to the Present Day, joins us. An expert on European history and politics, she will analyze why across Western Europe, long-ruling social democratic parties are in eclipse while far-right populism is on the rise. We'll discuss how much the far-right, pro-Russia, anti-immigrant and anti-EU Sweden Democrats profited from the lack of a narrative from the centre and the left while they were able to demonise Muslims and immigrants without offering solutions. And with Italy embracing far-right populism as Germany's AfD challenges Merkel and Poland, Hungary and the Czech Republic drift further into neo-fascism, xenophobia and white nationalism, we will assess the overall picture of radical politics filling the vacuum left by sclerotic socialists who fail to defend the EU and its values and build on its success while offering no alternative narrative to Trump-like demagoguery. Then we'll assess the move by the Trump administration to close down the Palestinian mission in Washington, while National Security Advisor John Bolton cites Palestinian efforts to prosecute Israelis for alleged violations of international law and the mistreatment of noncombatants in threatening American judges and lawyers working with the International Criminal Court. Khaled El-Gindi, a fellow in the Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution, who was an advisor to the Palestinian leadership on permanent status negotiations, joins us to discuss how under Trump the U.S. has taken such a pro-Netanyahu stance that it doesn't even pretend anymore to be an honest broker between the Israelis and Palestinians. Then finally, we will speak with Richard Clark, who served three consecutive presidents as Special Assistant to the President for Global Affairs, National Coordinator for Security and Counterterrorism, and Special Advisor to the President for Cyberspace, whose latest book is Warnings, Finding Cassandras to Prevent Catastrophes. He joins us to discuss the probability of Russian cyber meddling in the November elections and the unprecedented dangers of having such a reckless and compromised president who is acting more like a tool of a foreign power than a defender of democracy. And joining us now is Sherry Berman, a professor of political science at Barnard College of Columbia University, whose research interests include European history and politics, the development of democracy, populism and fascism, and the history of the left. Her forthcoming book is Democracy and Dictatorship, From the Ancien Regime to the Present Day. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sherry Berman.
Glad to be here.
And what's your verdict here, Sherry, in terms of obviously the far right did well in Sweden, but not as some alarmists predicted, and the Social Democrats have been in eclipse. They've dominated Swedish politics for almost 100 years. And who's going to form a government? It seems like a standoff.
Well, it is a standoff. It's not possible for either the traditional parties of the left, led by the Social Democrats, nor the traditional parties of the right, led by the largest right party called the Moderates, to form a majority government now that the Sweden Democrats, the populists, have almost 18% of the vote. So probably what you're going to get is a minority government, although it is possible that, unlike in the past, the center-right parties will find the temptation to rely on the populists too great to resist, in which case you would get a center-right government, but one that depends on the populists, thereby giving them an awful lot of influence over policymaking, particularly on the issues they care most strongly about, namely immigration, migration, asylum policy, etc.
But the Conservatives vowed prior to the election not to form a government with the far-right Sweden Democrats.
That is correct, and Sweden is unlike many other European countries in that all the traditional parties have thus far refused to form coalitions with the Sweden Democrats. However, there is the option of the traditional right parties forming a minority government and then depending on the Sweden Democrats to pass policy. That seems increasingly likely as a possibility, simply because, as I said, otherwise a majority government is not possible. And the Sweden Democrats have been claiming that given their very large share of the vote now and the significant increase from the last election, that it would be undemocratic, quote unquote, not to give them more influence in policymaking.
So immigration was clearly a big issue, and while the Sweden Democrats did obviously, sound the alarm as much as they could, and it seems to have paid off somewhat for them, it's nevertheless, Sweden has the highest number of asylum seekers per capita, but it's still 160,000 out of a population of, what, about 10 million?
Well, the Sweden actually now has a higher percentage of foreign-born citizens than even the United States does. So it has the highest percentage of foreign-born citizens of any European country now, except for sort of the micro-states like, you know, Andorra or Monaco. And this is a country that a generation ago was fairly homogenous. The largest rate of change happened during the refugee crisis of 2015 to 2016, when the country did take in 160,000 refugees, which is proportionately twice the number that Germany took in. And we all know about the pictures of Merkel and Germans taking in really large numbers of refugees. But the Swedes took in twice as much proportionately. But overall now, Sweden has almost 20% of its residents being foreign-born. So that is really a gargantuan change for a generation or so, in a country, again, that was homogenous up until, you know, a few decades ago.
So you're quoted as more or less saying that the Social Democrats simply did not come up with an alternative narrative, and that essentially the far right Swedish Democrats filled that void. I actually recently spoke with a Swedish journalist who's obviously a supporter of the Social Democrats, as had been the tradition, if you will, in Sweden. And she was saying that, you know, when she would go to work, for example, leaving her apartment, there's a little sort of wooded area between her apartment and the bus stop. And, you know, she's walking to the bus stop early one morning and there's a Roma family that have camped there, and the father is relieving himself right in front of her. And she expressed a great deal of discomfort just in general, the sort of cultural clash, if you will. It wasn't so much, Syrians or Afghans, but in this case, Roma, which, of course, you know, have been badly mistreated in Hungary. So is there a sense of denial? Has political correctness hobbled the Social Democrats from really, you know, rather than capitalizing and demagoguing an issue, trying to solve it?
Well, look, I think that what has happened is that for a variety of reasons, I don't know if I would call it political correctness. It may just have been an assumption on the part of generally sort of cosmopolitan and tolerant elites that these problems could be solved. And in fact, if you look at the data, Sweden has actually made remarkable progress integrating immigrants increasingly into the labor market, raising educational levels, and on a whole variety of other practical measures. But the scale of the challenge is simply immense. As I said, the demographic change is unprecedented, not just for Sweden, but even for other European countries. And so I think a combination of not fully recognizing how immense the practical challenges would be. Most of the immigrants are not educated doctors and lawyers. They're people fleeing conflicts with very low education levels, very different cultural backgrounds, very little skills that would enable them to integrate easily into the Swedish labor market. So there was a large practical challenge that I think may have been underestimated. And I also think there's a general tradition of cosmopolitanism and tolerance. And so I think a lot of the leaders just assumed that, again, things would take care of themselves. And they sort of left the field too much to the Sweden Democrats to define the narrative, not only on immigration in particular, but on connecting immigration to other problems that Sweden faces with its welfare state and other kinds of social policy problems. And so, you know, a whole variety of things came together, I think, to kind of sideswipe the Social Democrats and work to the advantage of the populist Sweden Democrats.
So could the Social Democrats have made the argument that we don't so much have a migration crisis as an integration crisis?
Yeah, Yes, and I think, in fact, that is the general sense, actually, on the part of most Swedes. So if you look at survey data, Swedes still come out as the least racist, least nationalistic people in Europe. Their concerns when they talk about immigration have to do with quite practical things like assimilation, like protecting the welfare state, like making sure that everybody works and everybody contributes to the tax base and things of that nature. So I think what should have been done was a greater stress been placed on the incredible accomplishments of Sweden over the past years. The economy is in general doing very well. And again, it has absorbed an immense number of new immigrants without the kind of social upheaval you might have expected, and build on those already significant successes to talk about how the strong Swedish state and the strong Swedish model was going to be able to integrate all of these new citizens into Swedish society, into the Swedish labor market, into Swedish values. But again, I think that the problem was not perhaps fully thought through, and so it was left to the Sweden Democrats too much to define the conversation. And so it ended up being about crime, it ended up being about terrorism, it ended up being about failed immigration and a whole variety of other negative things, rather than a focus on the positive accomplishments Sweden has actually achieved.
And there was a car or truck, I think it was used as a murder weapon, which we've seen, unfortunately, all too often in Europe, in Sweden, in a shopping mall area. I believe it was an Uzbek who mowed down a bunch of people. And I'm in terms of the overall statistics, though, there have only 113 murders last year out of a population of nearly 10 million. I think almost that many are killed in Chicago over a weekend. So I mean, I've become addicted to Swedish mysteries and dramas on television, and Wallander and all these others. It seems like they have the greatest crime writers in the world, but does that exaggerate the murder rate, which is incredibly low?
Yes, I think there are many more crimes in Swedish novels than there are in Sweden. If you look at the statistics, crime in Sweden overall has gone down. This is also true of Germany. However, what has now unfortunately happened in Sweden is that many migrants have become concentrated in areas where they predominate, where there's, again, large amounts of unemployment, large amounts of people who don't speak Swedish, large amounts of people with low education levels. And so these areas have had rises in all kinds of crimes. So, for instance, there was recently in the news a very terrible case of some bombing of some cars in Sweden. This didn't take place in central Stockholm. This took place in a very poor immigrant neighborhood. Now, that doesn't make it better, but the crime that has occurred has generally been concentrated in certain areas. It's not an overall rise in the crime rate. So while it's definitely a real problem, and ghettos or, you know, concentrated enclaves of poor people or people who are not well integrated in society, that is definitely a social problem. But it's important to recognize what exactly the problem is so that you can solve it. So again, there has been crime, there has been terrorism. Has it been a gigantic wave of either of these things? Absolutely not. Again, that does not mean it isn't problematic and needs to be taken care of, but a few spectacular pictures definitely can stick in people's minds and blind them to what the sort of more general reality actually is.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes, back to the stalemate in terms of not being able to form a government, or at least the numbers are pretty close. What's your prediction? Do you see political paralysis or some kind of solution happening soon?
Well, look, Sweden had a minority government before the election. You can and have had minority governments in Sweden. It has the kind of system where, in fact, a government can come to power with a minority of the vote. The problem with minority governments, as you might suspect, is that they tend to be weak and they tend to be vulnerable. So if Sweden wants to deal with the actual problems, it does have a strong government able to pass significant policy reforms through parliament would be necessary. That looks unlikely. Again, the most probable outcomes are either another minority government of the left or a minority government of the center-right that relies on the Sweden Democrats to pass certain policies. And they will, again, the price that the center-right would have to pay for that is much stricter immigration policies, and probably a lack of the kinds of reforms to the welfare state that would actually make it more responsive and make it more efficient. The Sweden Democrats' response to the welfare state problems is to just chop off immigrants' ability access to social policy and to limit the number of immigrations, but to limit the number of immigrants, rather. But that's not going to solve the problems.
Well, your statistic, though, 20% of the population being foreign-born is pretty extraordinary. And that's something that definitely is stuck in my mind. I thank you for joining us. I appreciate it, Sherry Berman.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
And again, I've been speaking with Sherry Berman, who's a professor of political science at Barnard College of Columbia University, whose research interests include European history and politics, the development of democracy, populism and fascism, and the history of the left. Her forthcoming book is Democracy and Dictatorship from the Ancien Regime to the Present Day. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back looking into how Trump has basically told the Palestinians, it's my way or the highway.